Hello everyone, and welcome to TI Fluid Systems announcement of full year 2022 results. My name's Daisy and I'll be coordinating your call today. If you would like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the call over to the President and CEO, Hans Dieltjens. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today and welcome to TI Fluid Systems PLC's results presentation for the full year of 2022. I'm Hans Dieltjens, CEO and President of TI Fluid Systems, and I'm joined today by our CFO, Ron Hundzinski. So if we skip the disclaimer and take it as read and turn to slide three for the agenda. So this morning, I will walk you through the key highlights of the year and then hand over to Ron, who will take you through the group's financial performance. Following that, I will talk about business development, and then we will provide an opportunity for your questions and answers. So turning to slide four, you will see an overview of our financial new business awards and strategic highlights. Full year revenue grew by 10.5% to 3.3 billion euros compared to a market volume increase of 6.7%. This is on a constant currency basis, revenue increased by 5.2%, so a slight underperformance, which was exclusively driven by our performance in China. As Ron will explain, we did outperform in North America, Europe, and the rest of Asia Pacific, but please note we expect to return to outperformance in China during 2023, resulting from the group's launches and volume ramp-ups, especially in our BEV product lines. We will come back on this point later. Inflationary cost increases during 2022 have been the main challenge for the group and the primary reason of not achieving our financial expectations. Notwithstanding the 143 million euro of inflationary impact experienced in 2022, our team made good progress on negotiations with our customers to recover approximately 70% of these cost increases. So looking forward to 2023, we do expect cost inflation to persist and the discussions with our customers to continue, but building from our achievements in 2022, we are confident of achieving similar to higher levels of recovery during 2023. In addition to the inflationary environment, market volatility and the macroeconomic environment persisted. Specifically, the rapid COVID policy change in China at the end of 2022 caused a significant impact on our production and revenues. We expect a continuation of this issue in H1 of this year, but even so, expect volume recovery during the second half of the year. However, we have continued our restructuring programs and other cost-saving activities to mitigate some of these challenges and delivered an adjusted EBIT margin of 5.5% and an adjusted free cash flow of 78 million euros. So as said, we understand the profitability for 2022 was under our expectation, but the group has identified a return to historic profitability plan in the medium term. Also here, we will come back on this later. Now on to some good news for the future. I'm really delighted to share that our hybrid and battery electrical vehicle bookings stand at a strong 2.6 billion euros revenue on a lifetime basis. Including BEV at 1.3 billion euros, a 29% year-on-year growth. These awards include 0.44 billion euros of battery electrical vehicle awards in China, with a good portion of these awards at local Chinese OEMs, an area we have been underrepresented in historically. Now, if you look at our strategy, which consists of supporting our lightweight and cost-effective plastic tubing, connector and tube assembly content for thermal applications in BEVs and forming the base for our pivot strategy. This is indicated by the launch of our TPRL, or thermoplastic refrigerant lines, combined with our progression on the growing need for modular technology in this thermal field. This is driving the growth opportunities. And therefore, we opened the first of our five e-mobility innovation centers in Rastatt, Germany in 2022 to answer the needs of our customers. The e-mix center enhances our collaboration with customers to develop thermal products, systems, and modules tailored to their needs through digitization, simulation, visualization, design, prototyping, and testing, and that all under one roof. Such was the positive response to the first EMIC. Work is now underway, setting up for 4 other EMIC centers in the USA, China, South Korea, and Japan, with a view to them opening over the next 12 months. Our commitment to sustainability has increased, and a new challenging science-based target have been set for carbon dioxide emission reduction by 2030. I will now invite Ron to take you through the detail of our financial performance.
Thank you, Hans, and good morning, everyone. Turning to slide 6, I will provide additional detail on revenue, regional revenue performance. In North America, light vehicle production increased by 9.7%, and our revenue increased by a strong 22.5% to 0.9 billion euros. Partially driven by the strength of the U.S. dollar in year, but also organic growth as shown by the constant currency increase was 12.9%, giving an outstanding outperformance of 320 basis points. Our historic limit exposure to the important truck market has now been addressed, and this is the factor in the growth, just as we predicted. In Europe, revenue grew by 6% or 5.8% on a constant currency basis compared to a relatively flat light vehicle production growth of plus 0.6%, resulting in an excellent outperformance of 520 basis points. The strong revenue growth was on the back of successful launches of new electric vehicle programs in both divisions. In Asia, our revenue increased by 5.3% year over year and was relatively flat on a constant currency basis. This translated into an underperformance of 870 basis points below Asia Pacific light vehicle production growth of 8.2%. This was driven by the rapid growth of BEV production in Europe, facilitated by government purchase incentives and the strength of the local OEMs. Hans will explain more in the business development commentary. Now, turning to slide 7, I have tried to show our revenue growth graphically by stripping out the FX and showing the regional contributions to the growth. Here you will see the strong contribution of North America and Europe, but also how Asia Pacific was relatively unchanged year over year for us. Europe is our largest single region, accounting for 37% of the group revenue, and North America 27%. Asia Pacific remains a strong territory for the group and accounted for 34% of the total revenue, and outside of China, outperformed by 250 basis points. As our global OEM customers with TI content on their EV launches in China, we'll be well placed to leverage this and grow in addition to the business we have won with the Chinese OEMs. Now, turning to slide 8. Which is new and shows an adjusted EBIT bridge. The chart shows the colossal impact on the results of cost inflation and, frankly, heroic efforts made to offset approximately 70% of it. In addition to the cost recoveries, restructuring plans has resulted in further 6 locations closings during the year and a downsizing of an additional 7. Any cost savings achieved by the group over the last year were offset by additional costs arising from inefficiencies caused by production volatility and supply chain disruptions. On slide 9, you will see the relative performance of the 2 segments. As you might expect, the FCS business has shown revenue growth of 16.6% as it is exposed to the whole market through being agnostic to the drivetrain. Margin reflects the cost inflation, business disruption impact, and some lower startup margins. The FTDS business, being exposed to a slightly more restricted market, which excludes BEV products, still posted growth in the year. We exited the Latin American market in 2021, which also hurts the year-over-year comparison. A significant portion of the cost inflation was able to be recovered due to indexing clauses within our contracts. Turning to slide 10 now, This is an overview of the components of adjusted free cash flow. In spite of the lean year, we continue our investment in capital items with a focus on the thermal business, a theme that will continue going forward. Working capital increased on the back of increasing sales activity and the year-end inventory balance increases due to lower December activity levels. Cash interest increased as interest rates began to rise in the year, which impacted our floating rate borrowings. I will take this opportunity to note that approximately half of our borrowings are in fixed rate unsecured notes, which have a low 3.75% rate locked in until 2029. On slide 11, you can see the reconciliation of adjusted net income, which is used to drive our dividend calculation. Subject to shareholder approval at the AGM in May, the board has approved a dividend of 1.54 euro per share, adding to the 1 euro per share interim dividend to give a full year payment of 2.54 euro, or 13 million euros in total, which is in line with our policy of 30% of adjusted net income. Turning over to slide 12, we can see the capital structure and liquidity of the group. Here you can see the cash balance of 491 million euros, largely unchanged year on year. Our leverage has crept up slightly, but this is more a function of lower adjusted EBITDA figure and FX on the net debt. Our main path for deleveraging will be acceleration of earnings growth. You will also see the debt facilities, and again, I draw your attention to 600 million unsecured senior notes at the favorable interest rate until 2029. Moving on to slide 13, which covers capital allocation, our current strategy remains as previously communicated. Capital investment will continue at the same sort of historic levels in the range of 4 to 5% of revenue, but we will prioritize the thermal investments. ICE investments in the FTS business will focus on maintenance. Dividends will remain an important use of capital allocation, and we see no reason to deviate from our current policy of paying 30% of adjusted net income. Absent any investments needed to expand the group's technology offering, deleveraging is the obvious priority, particularly given the interest rate environment. With regards to M&A activity, this is a great area of focus for us to allow the group to rapidly increase module content. With this in mind, we are evaluating mechatronic content suppliers of all sizes. Turning now to slide 14, I want to take a minute to talk about the exceptional non-cash impairment we have recorded. The 317 million euro impairment is a non-cash complex charge based on the current underlying business outlook. When you get a chance, please read notes 9.1 and 9.2 in our press release. I'd like to provide more details about the numbers. Nearly 73% of the value removed from the balance sheet is related to the Bain acquisition accounting, again, non-cash. The remaining 27% is allocated against no specific assets. It's simply just prorated. The main three drivers of the impairment are as follows. Approximately 40% of it is related to higher discount rates as interest rates have been rising. 35% is due to a slower ramp of margin expansion from our prior expectations, the result of lower starting point. And finally, 25% is related to slower volume recovery, mainly in Europe and North America. A few more points. As a total enterprise, if the county rules allowed us to offset the negative regions against the other regions, like Asia in particular, there would not have been any impairment charge. To that point, this means that the assumptions used for the allocation of purchase price accounting performed in 2015 from the Bain acquisition at that time are very different today. Given I'm in a period of handing over the CFO role to my successor, I think it's appropriate for Hans to talk through slide 15, as he and the team will be the owners of our margin progression.
Well, thank you, Ron. On slide 15, I wanted to provide some high-level guidance on the pertinent question of a route back to historic margins. First, it is important to note that nothing significant has changed in the fundamentals of the business, and the margins of the last 3 years were driven by major external factors, some of it which will come back naturally over time, such as volume, and some of which we will need to continue to handle, specifically inflation, pricing, and productivity. The volume recovery will come with good drop-through. We have used 25% in the chart to be conservative. I can also confirm the new business awards are progressing to historic margins. Sales prices improve, resulting from two main actions, being our successful and improved inflationary recovery with our customer base. This combined with new, mainly BEV-rated launches providing historic margin profiles. The thermal BEV product lines awards progressed well over the last years, and we see closer to or at historic levels of profitability with products launching in 2023 and beyond. Then productivity is a final element which should come as a function of a more stable volume and supply chain environment, and we expect to improve through this year and the years to come, combined with the continued execution of our plans for restructuring and cost savings. So with this in mind, we see a clear path over the medium term to get back to double-digit margins. I will now return back to Ron to finish the remainder of the financial section.
Thank you, Hans. I will continue to discuss the 2023 outlook on slide 16. We are slightly more cautious than the S&P Global Mobility and foresee volumes modestly up at around 83 million units. 2023 revenue outperformance is expected to return based on the current production schedules. We are watching the situation in China closely. Adjusted EBIT margin is expected to expand above 6%, benefiting from the pricing and volumes as Hans has described, and adjusted free cash flow will recover to convert around 30% of adjusted EBITDA. We are committed to being more specific as the year progresses and as my successor has a chance to understand the dynamics of the business. With this, I'd like to hand the call back to Hans, who will talk about the most important part, and that is business development.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. In the next few slides, I want to illustrate how our strategy is driving business development. So turning to slide 18, business performance last year was a shock to many in the industry, but as you can see on this slide, the business fundamentals we have previously communicated remain solid, and they do not need to change resulting from these temporary setbacks. The company is looking ahead to resolving the temporary mix and volume issues experienced in China, improving its inflationary and volume recovery efforts, and returning to historic margins in the medium term. Our great management team, our technology, and our footprint are strengths which have not gone away, and the opportunities to grow in the electrical vehicle space are well laid out in the Take the Turn strategy. Moving on to slide 19, I am excited to highlight some of the details of the new business awards in the year. You can see a steady year-over-year increase in the awards of electric vehicle platforms to the extent that in 2022, 76% of the awards were on hybrid electrical vehicles or battery electrical vehicle platforms, a 50% increase compared to 2021. Of particular interest are the awards for BEV in China, which represent 35% of the BEV awards, assuring our representation in China is properly moving forward. For 2023, we expect similar or slightly higher bookings in the electrification field, pending the market. Award volumes can be lumpy and to some degree unpredictable as many OEMs finalize or change their strategies within the year. This could lead to some higher and lower booking years. I do wish to comment at this point on the related question of margin on these new awards. I can reconfirm that the company has progressed very well, and we overall see margins progressing towards or at historic profitability levels. On slide 20, I have shown some more detail of the content per vehicle for the 2022 awards. You will see that the average BEV awards are higher than for our ICE awards, which confirms our previous communication of overall higher CPV potential for BEV vehicles. As we go forward, we are further exploiting this opportunity with our lightweight thermal lines, connectors, and line assemblies, and especially we believe the modular approach will be an important driver to fully take benefit of the CPV opportunity. Please note that not all awards are at the maximum level, as we do not win all our components on all vehicles. The other point to note here is the split of the BEV awards, which was split fairly evenly between Europe, the Americans, and China. This provides some assurance that should other markets spike upwards, TI is well placed to benefit. Turning to slide 21 now, I wanted to spend some time reviewing the BEV growth in China, given the 2022 mix impact China had on our revenues and on our outperformance. In China, overall light vehicle production grew 6% in the year, with the global OEMs remaining more or less flat, and mainly the domestic OEMs accounting for the growth. Secondly, if you look at the BEV figures, you will see that the overall production volume increase was solely due to the BEV production with an increase of 93% year on year. Noting that, again, the vast bulk of this being with the domestic OEMs and Tesla. Thirdly, the BEV growth was also driven by the incentives offered by the government and came at the expense of the ICE vehicles. Please be aware that some of these incentives expired at the end of 2022. Now coming to TI Fluid Systems, the issue during 2022 was related to our historic underrepresentation on the domestic OEM BEV platforms and Tesla. This has mainly caused our underperformance in China. So looking forward to 2023, we have two main elements driving the underperformance into outperformance. First, resulting from our business booking initiatives over the last few years, we are launching 48 platforms in China, with 23 of them in the BEV field. We also see a good mix of global and local OEMs in our new launches. And secondly, we will see a volume ramp up of previously launched BEV products as the market in China is growing in the segment. Both elements provide some assurance of the temporary nature of the China mix issue, and we remain convinced of our return to outperformance during the year. Slide 22 shows our content on the Geely and Volvo SPA BEV platform with a robust content per vehicle of approximately 240 euros. For this platform, we will supply the battery coolant lines, the inner battery coolant lines, and also brake lines. This is a good combination of the typical new thermal products and current technology brake lines used on a BEV. On slide 23, you can see a launch for the EVA2 platform for BBAC, which has both battery electrical and hybrid vehicles. This content of coolant and brake lines is an example of how we are progressing in China, involving one of the global OEMs and their local partner. Moving to slide 24, and also moving forward on the PHEV front, here is an example of a PHEV pressurized tank supply to Great Wall. The company's proprietary pressurized fuel tank technology is being used here, delivering a CPV of around 90 euros. Now hopefully these examples provide some real insight into the traction we are generating in China. Moving to slide 25, I want to now shift gears and talk about some of our new technologies. At the core of our strategy are two product lines that offer our future revenue and margin growth profiles. First is the application of lightweight plastic lines, hoses, connectors, and line assemblies for thermal applications in BEVs. As you could see from the booking awards, the company has been very successful moving forward in this field. But I want to specifically point out our recent launch of TPRL, or thermoplastic refrigerant lines. This set of lines can replace several aluminium rubber constructs typically used in current refrigerant systems and forms a lightweight and cost-effective solution for the new generations of refrigerant systems. The company has already received the first TPRL awards in 2022 for launch in 2024. Turning to slide 26, so secondly, we see the increasing trend of OEMs moving away from component supply and are looking for partners to provide modules for integrated thermal modules. Modules are an assembly of components that make vehicle assembly easier and offer weight, cost, and efficiency improvements. This is truly a fantastic opportunity for TI, as many of our technical innovations allow the integration of mechatronic components. The components needed fall under the name of mechatronics, which is in simple terms our valves, pumps, and sensors used to control the flow of fluids in these battery electrical vehicles. TI Fluid Systems was able to start pre-development with multiple customers and receive business awards on this modular concept during 2022. We do expect this to further materialize during 2023 and beyond. Slide 27 provides an update on the new eMix, which are a strategic investment. Recapping the strategy, the center set up in Rastatt in 2022 was and is a great success for our thermal BEV product lines, with all the main competencies under one roof, close to our customers. This is not only in convincing our customers that we have the capability to help them innovate, but also in driving engagement. We are in the process of rolling out the model to four other key centers so that we can get the same enhanced engagement with our customers in the local regions, including the important market of China. Moving on now to discuss sustainability, please turn to slide 28. We are happy to report we have made significant progress in the year, both in terms of measurements of emissions, commitments to the reduction of emissions, waste reduction, and also the actions we take for the reduction. During the year, we have spent great effort to detail our Scope 1, Scope 2, and now also our Scope 3 emissions. We have set up systems to measure and evaluate our progression as we go forward and initiated several actions. From a 2019 level, you can see already initial achievements of reduction in 2022, and we incorporated in our planned budgets to fund these reduction efforts during 2023 and the years to follow. We have also significantly improved emission targets and used the science-based targets methodology to do so. We have now committed to a 50% reduction in Scope 1 and Scope 2 emissions and a 30% reduction in Scope 3 emissions, all by 2030 and from an absolute base in 2021. We have a multi-year plan in place to reduce our emissions, focusing on renewable energy, efficiency improvements, and also supplier engagement. Turning to slide 29, I am pleased to share that we're moving forward with gender diversity and our board has a 50-50 gender composition. Further, we took a different view on our hiring practices and implemented a target to support gender diversity by setting our hire rate diversity at the same rate of school graduation in a specific area. Our recruiting policies have been updated to support diverse hiring practices, and you can see on the graph achievements in the key hiring areas. Local action is also important, and TI is committed to supporting women in STEM studies and currently have 55 students benefiting from this program. So on slide 30, I just wanted to summarize the key takeaways. Our take-a-turn strategy is progressing very well with new business awards and the product line expansion with our TPRL lines and thermal modularity forming a really great opportunity. Our performance outside China shows revenue outperformance, and we expect China to return to outperformance this year for the reasons previously mentioned. We have shown our path back to our historic margins, and we will refine this as we progress. Our balance sheet is strong and does provide options. And underpinning all this is a commitment to sustainability. So prior to start the questions, I would just like to formally take the opportunity to wish Ron well in his retirement. His time with TI has coincided with an extremely difficult global set of circumstances, and his experience has helped us to navigate these. Thank you well, Ron. His successor, Alexander De Bock, will be joining at the end of this month, and there will be a short transition period. Hopefully, you will get a chance to engage with him over the course of the next few months. So with that, I would like to open the phone line for any questions, please.
Thank you. As a reminder, if anyone would like to register a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure you are unmuted locally. So that's star followed by one on your telephone keypad to register a question. Our first question today comes from Akshat Kacker from JP Morgan. Akshat, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. Three questions from my side, Akshat from JP Morgan. The first one is on growth and returning to outperformance in 2023. I think two parts to that question. Firstly, how are the growth dynamics split between FCS and FTDS business divisions, please? Should we still expect FTDS to show some growth in 2023? And secondly, how much of that outperformance in 2023 is still driven by further price increase assumptions? The second question is on the path back to double-digit margins in the medium term. Could you just share some details on what you have assumed in terms of overall market volumes, underlying inflationary pressures, and the cost recovery percentage from OEMs when you're trying to bridge this gap to double-digit margins, please? And the last one on BEV awards in 2022. Congratulations, firstly, on the strong wins. Can you just discuss the business win with Volvo and Polestar specifically? What drives the higher content of €240 in that vehicle? Because what I'm seeing, especially in 2022, your average content on the business wins was actually lower, close to €90 versus the €120 that you disclosed in 2021. So would like to understand that development, please. And finally, thank you, Ron, for all the wonderful collaboration over these years. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Akshat. First, when it comes to growth and outperformance and the split of the divisions, it is clear that given the overall situation on the BEV growth, that we will see the growth and especially the outperformance in our FCS division, where this is the driver of the increases, especially given the outperformance will be delivered mainly through the new launches of our and the historic launches of our battery electrical vehicle platform. Although that on the other side, we can see that FTDS is still growing when you compare the addressable market of FTDS. So if you deduct anything that is purely a battery electrical vehicle, and you look at the FTDS, FTDS is still growing in that respect. If you look at our margin recovery and our path to the double-digit world, we do have built in our plans generally the S&P or IHS, ex-IHS volumes increases that are there, delivering up to 2025 return back to around 90 million of global light per vehicle volumes into that. But the promise I would like to address to that is it's first driven by conversion on that upside. So it's about a 5 to 10% growth coming from an 82 million up to a 90 million vehicles in the period that is in the medium term. What we also see is that the margin on the new business progressing to historic, you can see that about 10 to 20% of replenishment rate is present per year. So you would see in 3 years, 2 to 3 years, up to 60% of product being replenished than with different margin profiles. And then we will still run our efficiency programs and expect the production stability, operational performance, and continue our restructuring efforts in order to deliver the double-digit margin. When it comes to the Volvo program, you can see that on the Volvo program, we did have a set of components, including in battery coolant lines. So we do have a high level of integration and a set of our components specifically on this platform. It does point to the fact that our CPV, our potential CPV on the battery electrical vehicle is to the levels that we historically communicated. And as I said before, we do not have all components all the time on all vehicles. We sometimes do win, for instance, purely the brake lines on the businesses. But in this case, we were able to win a good set of our components on the Volvo Polestar. Okay.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Christoph Laskawi from Deutsche Bank. Christoph, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my questions as well. The first one will be on the recovery assumption for 23 and also the respective inflation assumption that you factored in into the guidance. Could you give a bit more granularity on potential the gross headwind that you're seeing, from which cost buckets that is going to come? Others have been pointing more towards energy and wages driving the inflation, which seems to be a bit more difficult to recover. So I'm wondering why you are actually more positive versus 22 on the recoveries. And then follow up on the midterm question that Akshat had. You're a bit more cautious on 23 when it comes to volumes, but you're banking on IHS for 25. Can you explain why there is a difference and why you have more confidence on the medium-term forecast there? And then just lastly, on the business wins for BEVs in China, is there any material difference in the margins that you're generating in local versus domestic OEMs, or is it basically the same? Thank you.
On the recovery assumptions for 2023, what you could see is that roughly we have about 50% of the impact is coming from commodities, with another 35% coming from logistics and energy, and then about 20% from labor. So I think on the inflationary assumptions, I would like to ask and provide the rest of the question to Ron there to answer that part of it.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit the other day. A couple of things on the commodities that Hans has talked about. And what we're seeing is, and we saw this late last year, is that the commodity prices are starting to subside of the impact on the business as commodity prices have stabilized. Of late, you can see energy prices falling, quite frankly. So that's going to be different than we saw in 22. As we go down the other items, energy prices continue to be elevated, but like I said, they are starting to come down. So our assumptions that we did at the end of the year on energy have somewhat moderated as we got into this year. But again, that's the second item, as Hans mentioned. The item that is probably the more sticky for the business right now is the labor. The labor markets are still trying to play catch up on recoveries of the inflationary environment. So we're seeing requests from our work councils, for example, employees' expectations of nearly double the inflation rate that we saw for 22. I call that a lag indicator, right? Because the employees now are asking for their recovery, so to speak. So it's changed from what we saw before, where commodities are coming down. Energy is starting to level out, but we still see the labor side of it. Another way to look at it, Christopher, is this way. Historically, the company has ran a very, I would say, very strong negative 1% pricing with its customers. That metric for 2023, our goal is to actually make it slightly positive. That's a big change. So in the past was negative 1%. It could be positive, it won't be 1%, but it'd be a positive to neutral number. And then we look into our indexes. Obviously, we recover our indexy numbers, so that's not an issue. We've added more index commodities to the equation with the customers. But the area that I would say we have to struggle the most, obviously, is in the energy and labor recovery areas. Net-net, if you look at the progression for 23, it works out this way. If you take the revenue increase and you get a drop through of 20 to 25%, that alone it gets you to the 6% margin, roughly. If we neutralize everything else through recoveries, productivity, performance, everything else gets neutralized, that will level out the business. To the extent we can beat performance, we can beat recoveries from our customers, that has potential to drive the margin even higher for 2023. I think we'll provide more clear numbers at the half year once we see what the inflationary environment and recoveries were for the first half of the year, very similar to what we did last year and what we did for the full year of 22. But we're not there yet.
Okay, when it comes to the volumes for 2023 compared to how robust do we think the volumes for 2025 are, for 2023, we see still a couple of elements still potentially impacting the volume environment. The first is the remaining shortages and especially microchip availability. There are still estimates out there between 4.5 to 3 million of loss of vehicles because of microchip availability. We do also see and experiencing some Q1 China reduced volumes. And then we think an important element for this year is the demand situation or the demand destruction that is there this year. You have to see that last year on sales compared to production, there was about a 3 million gap there for the first year. We can see maybe a 1.5, 2 million gap there also this year. So it's a clear indication of demand destruction. For 2025, we don't have more direct visibility, but we believe that on the short term, the inventory will not be replenished as expected by S&P. So for 2025, we do expect that the majority of these issues have stabilized and therefore do not see a need to go off S&P volumes over there. If you look at the margin split between local and domestic, well, we can see more margin pressures on the local, and that is the reason why we have focused actually on higher level of technical content with these local people. As I explained in our technology part of the section, we are focusing towards, for instance, TPRL lines or our modular technology, and that's exactly the area we are focusing more and more is with the local OEMs in order to deliver the additional value there, and with that deliver similar margin profiles between the two customer groups.
Thank you, and Ron, all the best for the future, obviously, and thanks for the cooperation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Sanjay Bhagwani from Citi. Sanjay, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my question as well. And gentlemen, thank you for such a comprehensive presentation as well. So I've got three questions as well. My first one is like, when you talk about our performance, is it fair to say that in Europe and in the US, this probably continues at the same level what it was in 22, And when you talk about China, are you seeing this outperformance returning right from quarter one, or this is more like you expect eventually gradually come straight by quarter four? That is my first question, and I'll just follow up to the next one, if that is okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, when it comes to China, we do not see this outperformance already from quarter one. As we said historically, we did expect quarter one to be lower following from the events that happened in China in quarter four. We do expect the H2 or the second half of the year to really pick up for us, and especially because, as we mentioned, we have about 43 launches that are ongoing during the year in 2023, and it's as these launches progress, we will see an increasing level of outperformance. For Europe and for North America, we do indeed see the same level of outperformance as we saw, or similar level of outperformance as we saw in 2022.
Thank you. That is very helpful. And coming back on the pricing recovery, I think some of your peers are mentioning so there is this divergence in the prices, right? Like in terms of, like, let's say when the customers prepare their invoices, they tend to look at the LME prices of the metal. And if they, let's say, look at it for this year, probably LME prices indicate a price decline, like a big one. But then what we find is, like, suppliers are paying prices, the invoice prices are actually much higher than these LME prices, because first thing, you want to secure the supply, and also these metal suppliers are also facing this wage and energy inflation. So do you see this to be coming as a squeeze for this year, or are you already negotiating these to get these contracts changed more to, let's say, align with the prices that you are actually paying versus the prices that the metal exchanges show? That's my question.
Yeah. Well, the company itself, we work actually in two ways how to handle commodity prices. It's the first way we handle this is through indexes that we have agreed with several customers, and to a great extent now, and have increasingly agreed as we went forward. What means that there is a backward-looking element of that, meaning that either the last 3 months, maybe up to the last half year, the average price level is calculated, and that is applied going forward for the commodity. So in a decreasing market, that would mean that, or increasing commodity price market, that would mean that there is some temporary benefit. What works the opposite way, if prices goes up, where you have a lag in the recoveries of that. And then the second part of it is that we do negotiate with our customers commodity prices where we do not have indexes in place. So that's the two ways. And you could see that historically our recoveries on commodities have been quite strong with levels above 80% on them. So we will not, the negative effect you describe, this is not going to be a issue for us as we move forward.
Thank you. That is very helpful. And my final question is, are you considering any sort of disposals specifically for the non-core part, let's say, when we talk about FDDS? I mean, given that the market is definitely not valuing this businesses appropriately, right? So any thoughts on that would be very helpful as well, in case you are planning to, like, make the business much more cleaner and the focus portfolio remains on the outperforming FCF. So please, any thoughts will be welcome.
Well, we are obviously continuously evaluating all options that are there for our future, and the company will move forward with the best options that that are there for us at the given point in time. We currently do not have a plan for a disposal of any of our business, given the conditions for that are not currently optimal to do that. So what we have, our strategy is clear that we will use the capacities and the assets of our business in order to support our future and our growth into the electrification business. And as an example, what you could see is that, for instance, in these modules, some of the assets that we have in our FTDS divisions can actually be used for producing these modules for electrified vehicles. So we're transferring this business into the electrification business instead of a disposal.
Thank you. That is very helpful. And all the best, Ron.
Thank you, Sanjay.
Thank you. Our next question is from Dominic Conve from Numis. Dominic, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, gents. Yeah, the standard three from me as well, if possible. I'm interested just in terms of margins on the BEV business. Hans, I think you said very clearly, probably twice, that you expect the margins there to trend to at or at least towards the group historic margin. But does that leave the door open to suggestion that maybe not there yet? I'm just keen to understand, because a number of other auto suppliers that are making this transition are just noting that actually they're seeing quite significant increase in R&D requirement to make that leap that is dragging on margins in the short term. So I think it'd be interesting just to hear what percentage of revenues were specifically from BEV platforms last year, what you think that might grow to in the 2023 would be the first question, and margins therein. Secondly, I'm just intrigued always around the tax guidance. It's something that seems particularly tricky, you guys, and I guess slide 34 would be interesting to get a bit of color on that, specifically what your revised effective tax rate guidance is for 2023, and specifically perhaps what the UK losses might be within that. And then finally, just in terms of technical question around the PPA, with regard to the impairment charge, what the impact that will have on the future PPA schedule? Thank you.
Okay, maybe I'll start by asking Ron to answer the question on the tax and the PPA.
Sure, I'll go first, Hans. Okay, so on the tax rate, you can see on slide 34, effective tax rate of 37% and 45% and 22%. I would say that going forward, the tax rate is going to be between that range again. And the primary reason is because of the UK losses. You can see they're very similar year over year. Now, just to explain what that is, those expenses are partially driven by debt and partially driven by what you call stewardship expenses. Stewardship expenses cannot be sent to other parts of the world, because those taxing authorities don't allow those deductions to be deducted in those regions. So those costs have to reside in the domicile country. Now, we do have income. We have two manufacturing plants in the UK, but they are not enough income to offset the items I just mentioned. So as a result, when we have those losses, we cannot get a tax benefit of, say, 25%. A tax benefit of those 40-some million losses. Unfortunately, that's a structural problem. We are working with some consultants to reduce that. I wouldn't say it'd be materially reduced, but I would say that there are some other ideas that we have to lower that amount from the 43 million-ish every year. So unfortunately, that tax rate will remain elevated because it is a structural issue of the domicile of the country itself. So moving on to the PPA discussion, I think in the slide on impairment, we disclose what the benefit's going to be going forward, and that's going to be some, what's it here on slide, we'll go up to the impairment slide, which I think is slide 14. It's the $4 million benefit in 23, and that will get reduced as time goes on, because there is a natural amortization of that anyways that was, you know, built into the plans. But because of the write-off in 22, you get a additional quicker amortization of the PPA. This is a point for everybody. The goodwill does not get amortized. It's the uplift assets only, the intangibles of that get amortized. You cannot amortize goodwill. So you don't get the benefit of the $217 million because that was never amortized anyways. So I'll pause for a second and see, Dominic, do you have any other questions on those two items?
No, that's really helpful. Thanks, Ron.
Okay, so then, Hans, back to you on the margin.
Yeah. So on the margin for the BEV business, I said trending to or progressing towards or at. You have to see that for these new BEV platforms, there is a certain ramp-up cost that that are associated with this. And then secondly, that the volumes are still relatively low when it comes to this product lines. So as these progress, we will see margins improve as these volumes increase naturally. That does not mean that the built-in margins we have there, we do see them to being at the levels that we have seen historically with our other product lines. When it comes to the percent of revenue of our BEV, our percent of revenue was more or less in line with the market last year. Market production last year, battery electric vehicles, was around 10%, probably 11%. So that's also what we see in our revenues. And as we go forward, that's a similar trend that we will see going forward. Okay.
Thanks, Hans.
Thank you. Before we take our next question, I would just like to kindly ask if everyone can only ask one question due to time constraints. Our next question is from Tom Swift from Morgan Stanley. Tom, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the question. Just to come back to the point about the M&A pipeline, I think you made the comment about looking for mechatronic suppliers of all sizes. Can you just talk about what's in the pipeline? And it sounds to me like maybe you're looking for something transformational. Can you just focus on that a little bit more, please? Thank you.
Yeah. So we continue to look for acquisitions that reinforce our thermal strategy. And as I said, especially in the mechatronic fields, what is either pumps or valves or other components that are assembled onto these modules. We're also looking for or investigating still other opportunities that are pursued, and that's in the form of corporations, potential JVs or other elements that we can drive forward with. So we do have a pipeline of activity that we are working towards. So I would like to ask you to stay tuned on it as we progress on this element of our business.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question today comes from Jose Asmundi from JP Morgan. Jose, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Very good morning, Jose. I think Tom was asking, I think, a very good question, so I want to follow up on that one. How far can you, when you think about acquisitions, how do you think about your balance sheet and how far can you stretch your balance sheet in terms of acquisitions? Following up on Tom's question, and what I really want to ask also was, if I may, on page 15, and that price recovery, just very quickly, when do you think the bulk of the price recoveries are coming? Is it 23 or is it a bit more split between 23 and 24? Thank you.
Well, as said on the price recovery, we expect our price recovery for this year to be minimum to the level of what we saw last year, but we do actually expect it also to be better than last year as we progress in our methodologies and our way forward into that. When it comes to the acquisition balance sheet, I would like to hand back to Ron that question.
Sure, Hans. All right, Jose. Let's talk about it in two ways of the balance sheet. The first example I want to give is prior to this year and prior to the pandemic and everything we've gone through the last 3 years, you know our balance sheet was really in great shape. It was in 1.2, 1.3 leverage, and obviously that gave us a lot of powder to basically to execute M&A activities. We find ourselves in a different spot right now at 1.9. But if you take a look what drove that difference, it's all because of the EBITDA number that deteriorated over that period of time. we didn't put any more debt on the balance sheet, as Hans mentioned earlier. So what our expectations are is that as we start to accelerate our earnings potential, as we just pointed out on slide 15, right, this year and next year and the following year, that's going to drive leverage back down. As we drive leverage back down, put more cash on the balance sheet, and if you add it to the revolver in our lines, we find ourselves in a very good spot generating cash so that M&A activity most likely wouldn't happen in 2023, but you know, high probability years after that, we find ourselves where the balance sheet would revert back to where it was before, and then you could see a good acquisition of, say, $200 million potential, something in that range, and the leverage may come back up to the 1.9, but that's pretty much acceptable. I think the company previously communicated that we're comfortable going that high at 2, right? But the leverage at 2 got there not because of acquisitions right now. It got there because of the market conditions. So I think it's going to take some earnings acceleration for us to get comfortable to do a transaction. Does that help you?
That's super helpful. That's brilliant. Thank you, Rob. And all the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our last question for today from Vanessa Jeffries from Jeffries. Vanessa, please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, I was wondering if we could just quickly talk a little bit about this content per vehicle point that was raised earlier. So the battery average is 86, and like Aksha said, the last year it was 118. I think in 2020 it was 135, and 2018 it was a little bit higher than that. I don't think it's necessarily a negative thing because your bookings are obviously going up, but why has that gap narrowed so much, do you think, and has the same thing happened with hybrids?
Yeah, thank you, Vanessa. I think it's just merely an effect of the amount of platforms that we are present on and our increased penetration of that. That, as I said before, we don't win all products on all vehicles. And if you, for example, if you use only brake lines on a car or you win only brake lines on electrical vehicles, that obviously reduces the content. And the second part of that, you could see that a great deal of our wins, 0.44 billion euros, was in China, what are mainly smaller vehicles with a little bit less CPV on them, what has driven the CPV and the content per vehicle. But what you could also see is it's still significantly higher than the ICE vehicles wins that we have. So it's not a worry, or it's not as expected. It's just a fact of the practical situation out there that, again, you don't win everything on every car. And as you correctly said, our total wins progress very well, so reflected for the business. That is the way we wish to move forward.
Thanks, that's helpful, and all the best, Ron.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. This is all the questions we have today, so I'll now hand back over for any closing remarks.
Yeah, if there are no further questions, in closing, I would like to thank everyone for the call and for joining us today. We do look forward to seeing some of you over the next few days, or talk to some of you over the next few days, and again in August for our half-year results. So thank you, and with that, the operator, please disconnect the call. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining today's call. You may now disconnect your lines and have a lovely day.